If we turn now to a far more recent event, the alleged shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School, performed by one Adam Lanza, which was a young man who was about 20 or 21 years old. He was about 6 feet tall, but only weighed 115 or 20 pounds. He's alleged to have shot and killed his mother, then taken a whole lot of equipment, including a Bushmaster and AR-15, to the Sandy Hook Elementary School, as well as two handguns, a 9mm and a 10mm, shot his way into the school, and then, you know, massacred 20 children in two different classrooms, as well as the principal, Don Hofspring, and other teachers and so forth. So there were 26 dead. Then he committed suicide, allegedly. Now, that's the story. Are there any reasons we shouldn't believe it? Well, it's very interesting. It turns out there was a Connecticut State helicopter there at Sandy Hook School at 9:15, which was 20 minutes before the first 911 call was put in. There was no surge of EMTs into the building to rush the little bodies off to hospitals where doctors could declare them to be dead or alive. There was no surge of ambulances either to take them away. In fact, if you look at photographs of the area, it's largely bereft of any activity at all. In fact, most of these of such vehicles as there are were jammed up at the fire station, which is about a quarter mile up the road from Sandy Hook. Now, there's a whole lot more about this, which I published in an article also extremely widely read, not only on Veterans Today, but around the world, entitled Top 10 Reasons Sandy Hook Was an Elaborate Hoax, where I begin by observing that in the final report from the Connecticut police about this tragedy, they do not even give the names or the ages or the sex of the alleged victims. That's very, very peculiar. It's also the case that the Newtown city clerk entered into secret negotiations with the city, with the state legislature to avoid issuing death certificates. It's also the case that the state attorney general made a big to-do and opposed the release of the 911 phone calls. In fact, there were something like 115, and although a judge determined that they ought to be released, to the best of my knowledge, the state attorney general has not complied, and only five or six have been released. In addition, a subcommittee of the state legislature has recommended that for any state employee to release any information about Sandy Hook other than through freedom of information request should be in violation of an e-felony, which could subject them to a five-year prison term, and where every member involved in the demolition of the school, which has now been completely torn down, had to take a lifetime gag order. If you find all of that suspicious, let me add that there's a whole mountain of evidence more going far beyond it. When Wolfgang Halbig, who's a former Florida state trooper, he's a school administrator with 36 years, both as assistant principal, principal, is a nationally recognized school safety expert, and I traveled to Newtown to meet with the Newtown School Board and explain to them why we are concerned about this. We had an agenda of beginning by going to the United Way of Northwest Connecticut, which has been one of the recipients of the millions and millions of dollars of donations that have been flooding in. By law, the records are available to public inspection, but in fact, when we showed up, they summoned the police, and a phalanx of seven or eight police, Newtown police, prohibited Wolfgang from entering the building to inspect the records, even though he was accompanied by his attorney, Day Lewis, who was explaining the law to them, and where Wolfgang was even quoting from a statement by the state attorney general as to why access should be permitted. We went from there to the Newtown Police Department because three of its top officers had been involved in the Newtown, in the Sandy Hook event, and Wolf asked to speak to them. Instead of speaking to them, they sent out a sergeant who told us that they were not available. Not that they were not in the building, but that they were not available. And they simply refused to speak to Wolf. Now, Think back upon it. What would this be like if this had been a legitimate deal? I mean, what kind of reception should we have received if this had all been on the up and up? Surely the United Way of Northwest Connecticut would have welcomed Wolf in, would have said, here are our records, take a look, because we have to maintain the highest degree of integrity, just as the state attorney general had asserted in the statements that Wolf was quoting to them when they were denying him access to the building. Take your time. If you want copies of any of our records, we'll make sure you get them. Their action, however, was precisely the opposite. When we went to the police department, who had asked Wolf if he were in the area to check in, you would have thought that the chief and the other officers who'd been involved in the Sandy Hook event would have made themselves available to reassure Wolf about what had actually happened and why his concerns were misplaced. Instead, that did not happen. They stonewalled Wolf, and they wouldn't talk with him. So when we discovered that their response was precisely the opposite of what we had expected or would have expected had the whole event been real rather than a fabrication, we departed for lunch. And after lunch, we headed for the schoolhouse where so many events had taken place. Now, there's a lot of fascinating documentation about what happened that day. I recommend a wonderful study about Sandy Hook made by Sophia Smallstorm entitled Unraveling Sandy Hook, which begins with a talkover as the bus is approaching the school by an expert on weapons and marksmanship by the name of Mike Powers, who was on Joyce Riley's show, the Power Hour. Well, he is one of the experts. Actually, the one that Sophia used is a fellow named Mark S. Mann, which of course means marksman, which is a pseudonym because he's actually a police officer and firearms expert right in Connecticut. And he doesn't want to, you know, endure whatever retaliation might come. But from their reports and my own experience as a former Marine Corps officer who used to supervise recruit training at San Diego and marksmanship at Edson Range Camp Pendleton, which were the same recruit depot in marksmanship range where Lee Oswald took his training, I can assure that what they had to say about the preposterous character of the alleged shooting of this young man who had something like a 90% target to, you know, kill to target ratio. In other words, virtually everyone that he shot at was hit, indeed multiple times, if we are to believe Wayne Carver, who is not just the local coroner, but is the state medical examiner, who gave a very peculiar press conference on the day of the shooting, which James Tracy very astutely picked up on and critiqued, which was one of the most important articles written about Sandy Hook, which you can find at his memoryholeblog.com. Okay, check it out about Wayne Carver. Another interview that was taking place that day, by the way, was by Governor Malloy of the state of Connecticut, who did an interview with the press with a lieutenant governor and said that he and the lieutenant governor had been spoken to that something like this might happen. So as a philosopher trained in the analysis of language, I began reflecting on what he could possibly mean by something like this might happen. Did he mean he'd been warned that some young man would come into one of the schools of Connecticut and massacre a lot of children? In which case, presumably, as governor of the state, he ought to have issued warnings to make sure that nothing like that would happen. But he did no such thing. The other alternative is something like this might happen, that a mock terror drill would be conducted, and that it would be presented to the public as though it had been a real event in order to promote an aggressive gun control agenda and mental health criteria, which is precisely what has happened. When you think about by whom he might have been spoken to, it turns out that Attorney General Eric Holder had visited the governor less than a month before the event, that Eric Holder is very committed to a program called Longevity that's a gun control program. He appears to have been operating under the instructions of President Barack Obama, so that if we are right about all the evidence that this was in fact an elaborate hoax, then it appears to have involved the administration from the top down to promote gun control, and where some of you may or may not recall, but on the very day of the Boston Marathon bombing, Barack Obama came out and expressed his acute disappointment that the Congress had not passed any of the extensive gun control measures he had been lobbying for, but where he's been extremely aggressive in his role as the chief executive officer of the United States and has signed one executive order after another, and where any number of states have, in fact, seven or eight, have tightened up their gun control measures, even though the whole matter appears to be a hoax. Now, Wolfgang Halbig, whom I mentioned before, has submitted one FOIA request after another with virtually no responses. I have seen most of his submissions. They've been reviewed by his attorney, of which he actually has two, one in Nevada and one in... When we return, you're going to hear an interview with a school safety expert from Los Angeles by the name of Paul Preston. Listen very carefully to what Paul Preston has to say about Sandy Hook.
This is Sophia Smallstorm, and we're listening to a very interesting discussion. Paul Preston, school principal, school safety consultant, teacher, coach, superintendent. He has been in the California system for 41 years. He's now retired. So, Paul, let's continue. Can we get a little bit into Sandy Hook now and what set off your antenna about it?
Well, you know, I've been involved in many, many situations at schools that have been, you know, emergency type of situations, and was involved even to some degree with the Columbine situation, in that we had an individual who was trying to blow up the school, our school at the time, in a similar fashion to what was a predicted bomb threat that occurred at Columbine the 3 days before the Columbine shooting. And that's how we kind of got in touch with the Columbine people. They got in touch with us because it turned out to be a similar neo-Nazi group that was related to the Trenchcoat Mafia, of all people. And so learning and watching and seeing all these incidences play out, all these school shootings, I took an enormous interest in, because we were doing a study as to try and determine, because the neo-Nazis that we had been working with in our school along the same time of the Columbine incidents were telling us that there was going to be some big event take place. And so our staff, myself, we all wanted to sit down and figure out where this was all going to. And we studied a lot of the Nazi websites and so on. And we figured out that, yeah, there was something big going to happen. And well, then Columbine happened. So we watched with a lot of intensity, and with my own circumstances, and then also watching the videos and replays of other active shooter situations, I became sort of a specialist in that and applied it to my own active shooter training that I was doing and conducting with my own people.
Right. And now can we get into Sandy Hook?
Well, yeah. You know, of all the hundreds of things that hours that I spent watching these scenarios and investigating and reporting on my radio show, the first thing I noticed when I heard about Sandy Hook, I turned on the TV like everybody else. Now, I have always told everybody, when you're seeing these things play out in real time, the best news reporting is what's happening in real time that day of, in the moments that are, you know, around the incident. But document for yourself what's going on, because you'll never see it again. And the first thing that caught my eye as I was watching everything play out was the lack of intensity with which people were moving. And that really disturbed me. It hit me within the first few minutes of watching the, you know, the videos, the helicopters flying around and so on. Things just didn't seem to be right, like I would always understand in an incident command system. People weren't rushing around. People weren't panicking. They ran that one guy off into the woods, and then they arrested him, and they took him away, and there was no connectiveness to that. I was also wondering why all the emergency equipment wasn't around the school.
Right.
And so I didn't see any students either, which really bothered me.
So it was almost like too slow motion for a real event, not enough panic, not enough chaos. You had mentioned chaos earlier being part of these real situations. And
exactly.
Then, of course, a lot of support people running around and team people running around, like press and police, but not running fast enough, not running with intensity and alarm and panic and concern. I think
none of that was there.
Yeah. So, all right. And then what did you start thinking?
Well, just within the first 10 or 15 minutes, it just all looked too staged to me. And, you know, I know about staging these things since I've staged a number of them. And it, like I said, when you stage something, there's a complete lack of intensity as you would have in a real scenario when there's panic really taking hold of people and they're really afraid and they're screaming, yelling, and so on. Plus, the one thing that really bothered me was, where were the kids? You know, they had how many hundreds of kids there at the school? I didn't see them.
Right.
And there was lack of accounting for them. And right away, and I'll juxtaposition this with the situation that happened in Pennsylvania. You saw the kids right away. I know it's a high school, but, you know, you saw the kids right away. You saw their plan of evacuation of the school unfolding. Now, this is where it really falls apart for Sandy Hook with me. I saw no evidence of a real plan of student evacuation taking place. And that stuck to my head like crazy when I was in the moments watching this whole thing play out in real time.
That's very interesting. No evidence of a real plan, because only someone, I mean, everybody had their own response to it. You know, some of us were already clued in from previous kinds of situations. Oh, this has got to be not what they're telling us it is. But you come from the industry, the business, and you felt that there is, you knew. I would say it's probably not even a feeling. It was like, you know, set in stone in your head. Where's the plan? I don't see the plan playing itself out, right?
Well, I saw some of your evacuation centers, and I saw some of your tarps on the ground, the colored tarps and so on. But even that was pretty odd, because normally if you have the tarps out there, every active shooter situation you've ever seen, there's been somebody on the tarps, or there's been some help that's been given to somebody. Somebody's been wounded. But none of that was even evident, and I didn't see anybody trying to rush to anybody's help at all in a mass casualty situation. That, see, when you don't see that, I mean, I can remember, and I'll go back to the example I gave before about the 13 that overdosed. We had people everywhere, and we had people everywhere until everybody was safe, which was 35, 40 minutes, almost an hour. And that was never happening there at Sandy Hook. You didn't see the mass of people doing that.
Yeah, it's more like the press filled in for that missing element. The press sounded more concerned and panicked on TV as they reported, but the actual participants were not. So, and we got, you know, long after the fact, we got the supposed 911 calls. We got various people giving their versions of it on television as they got interviewed. But we didn't see it on the ground. And so how long did you watch it for? Over a period of days, weeks? And what were your thoughts?
I make it a study. I study these things intensely. And what really put me over the top was the next morning with Robbie Parker going out there. And I saw that clip as it happened. And I said, there's something really wrong here. And that's when I started thinking about the actors. Mm-hmm. That you can actually rent these actors out. In fact, they put these things up for training all the time. And I just said, this is not, first of all, his demeanor was terrible. And I would never go out, and I know sometimes this happens, but to send a parent out to talk to the press in that fashion about the daughter that he just lost, none of that seemed to be appropriate. None of it seemed to fit. And his behavior with the smiling, laughing thing, and then getting into character that you could see, I said, no, I'm not buying this. I'm not buying it.
Yeah, no. Well, very few other people did. So did you contact anyone? Did you speak to anyone? I don't mean officially, but in your own network of friends.
Yes.
And what were their thoughts?
Almost everybody was unanimous that it was a false flag.
And when did you start looking it up on the internet? Because I think people started posting immediately. You know, they were making YouTubes, and the community began to express online. So when did you start looking into all of that?
Well, a side note to this is I have a lot of sources in and around in that area. I have a lot of sources in regards to what's going on with the president, the administration, and so on. And every one of my sources said it was a false flag.
Now, these are quasi-official, or what kind of sources are these?
Let me say that these are the sources that are very close to this administration who knows what's going on.
Really? So they're like almost insiders then?
Oh, yeah.
And they all, did they say it was a false flag because they figured it out like you did, or they had actual factual knowledge of such?
They have factual knowledge of such. That's part of the plan.
I see. And so how much were they willing to tell you, and what else were they willing to tell you? Anything?
Well, they told me quite a bit, and some of it I can't reveal to you.
Mm-hmm.
But it fits the narrative of the anti-gun movement and the disarmament of America, and that's what the focus was.
And you realize that that's part of the broader picture. That's the Agenda 21
Restart Absolutely.
Society. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that, or do you want to stick with the Sandy Hook material? I'll let you decide.
Well, let's go ahead with the Sandy Hook material, and then we can jump into that.
Okay. So we're past Robbie Parker now, and what about the funerals? You must have known then that, did you have any concept about victims or no victims, et cetera?
Well, that whole thing was pretty shaky. What was really starting to filter in the system, and which was just confirming what I was already being told, was some of these charity sites that had developed. But by the way, they were put up the day before the shooting. And I had gotten some screenshots, and I had confirmed with my sources, and some of them were just thinking it was a very sloppy operation, actually. There were reassurances to me that there really were no victims, and that everything's being staged. And, of course, the funerals, to me, you go and look at the whole funeral process, it looked like they were all staged, from the Robbie Parker one in Utah to the Sarah Parker one with the Parker family. And then I started getting information from people that actually had attended that funeral who lived in Utah and said there was something very funny about it.
Now, I would like to ask you whether your sense is that these are real families even, or are they patched together?
Well, you know, that's a good question because, the thing that rolls around in my head is, you know, the actors type of thing, you know. And, because you can put families together, then these acting programs will do that under certain training scenarios. And so it's a good question. So it really is a fair question to ask whether or not they were real families.
And then, of course, because they continue to speak and organize and be called upon to comment, they have to be formed into these family groupings over time and remain grouped like that, whether they are truly married or not. You know, and here's the one thing that I noticed. When you see a couple, if they seem really like an odd couple, then that kind of strikes you as weird. And I saw that. I saw a very odd coupledness with lots of these Sandy Hook families.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't seem to me like, why would this person marry this person and live with them? They're so totally different. That happens sometimes, but in this context, it really jumped out at me. Myself, anyway. I don't know if you noticed that.
It's difficult to say, when you saw them together, whether they were natural families or not. And I'm suspicious of that. And like I said, I'm suspicious because I know that you can put these families together with some of these acting companies out there. And that just kind of blends into what I was already being suspicious about. So now there's a lot of things that would go into the details of being able to examine. And of course, I've seen a lot of the pictures and so on, and some of the pictures don't match up, especially the one with the Parkers in the White House. And it looks like to me that's Sarah Parker sitting right there, who's supposed to be a victim.
There's no Sarah Parker, Emily.
Which one is it? The Parkers that were in there, but maybe it's not the Parkers.
Oh, you mean with Obama?
Yeah, with Obama,
It's Emily or Madeline. Those are the two older sisters, and a lot of people felt that was Emily Parker leaning on Obama's.
Yeah,
knee.
Emily Parker. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, but then have you seen the Super Bowl video with the kids singing?
Yes, I have seen that.
Well, there is a girl who looks a lot like an older Emily Parker in that video, and so if that was Emily at the White House, or actually, I think, I don't know if it was at the White House, but with Obama, she couldn't be six in one picture and then just a month or two later, 12 or 13. So
right.
That's where we have to make a decision. But what did you think of all the photographs of the children? Did you notice anything, the portraits that we were shown, that these are the victims? Did you notice anything about those portraits?
No, other than some of the malformations of different parts of their bodies seem to be a pretty obvious thing. The whole thing, when you take a look at the totality of this, in my opinion, it's very sloppily done.
Why would it have been so sloppily done, though?
Well, you know, when, it's kind of like sometimes there's order that comes out of chaos. And when you have these chaotic situations, people want to put things back together as best they possibly can to feel more comfortable or to recover from it. And I didn't see any of that. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but people don't want to have that chaos. They want to heal. They want to come back together. They want to solve a problem so that they can move forward. And that's part of what happens when you do these drills, is that you take a day or so and you talk about what happened so that you can improve upon it and make it better. People do that naturally, even when there's chaos and it's an emergency situation, because they want to seek normalcy again. I didn't see the same kind of emotions, if you will, or the same kind of communications between parents, between kids, that you would normally see in those situations. I just didn't see it. It looked just phony to me.
So you mean the community itself of Sandy Hook, they did not try to repair in the organic way?
I would say that's true. The from the parents to the kids to the entire community.
What do you think of this privacy issue that has been bandied about by the authorities, that all the privacy needs to be respected and we can't reveal this or that?
That to me just adds more fuel to the fire, because that's not what you do in the normal situation of an incident command system. You get the facts out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, oftentimes when you get the facts out, you're also looking for criminal behavior. And the more information you can get out that's that way, the better. And I'm certainly not buying the notion that the parents weren't allowed to see the kids.
The bodies, identifying the bodies.
That to me, it should be a red flag to anybody who has looked into Sandy Hook, that the parents weren't allowed to do that. What's up with that?
And what did you think of the coroner's behavior at his press conference?
Well, there's many things about him. First of all, I didn't understand why all of a sudden there's 26 bodies and then there's no coroner or doctor who's looked at the bodies and they're declared dead. And then all of a sudden the coroner comes out and everybody says that there was a automatic gun or a handgun that was used. And then the coroner on his own comes out and said, oh no, that was a AR-15 that was used. And so there's a lot of confusion, you know, about that coroner, his report, his reporting out. Nothing seems very clear and concise to me. And, you know, I would argue that, you know, as I looked at him and watched what was going on, he seemed to just be answering questions on the fly without a lot of knowledge behind the questions.
And this suggested to you that this was a sloppily created event.
Absolutely.
And would you say that that was because of the portent of the whole thing, that there were people involved in this, let's say Dr. Carver, the coroner, who had some idea, if it was a scripted event, that it was going to go big and really big. So do you think that the sloppiness of it was because in being organized, it is very difficult to juggle how people are going to perform, given that they know how big this thing could get?
Well, and, you know, what happens is that you have to, if you're going to do these things and carry through with the lie, everybody's got to be telling the same lie at the same time, all the time.
Right.
And I think that's what, you know, my judgment of kids and parents and stuff, seeing them lie, I was seeing a big lie being perpetrated right in front of me, because nothing seemed to be consistent. And like you said, which I thought was interesting, is oftentimes the media would fill in a lot of the blanks for you. Classic example of the blanks comes up when you talk about, where are the kids that are evacuating the school? There are helicopters overhead. They certainly would have been able to show, you know, hundreds of kids exiting the school. That was never shown. But you did see a picture out in a parking lot, which, by the way, if you take a long look at this picture with all these kids being let out, about 15 or 20 kids being let out by teachers and adults from this parking lot, if you take a look at the parking lot from the aerial views, you can see there are different cars in the parking lot in that area. So obviously that was done during some sort of drill, and that's my opinion, right, and didn't match with what was going on at the time. So nothing was matching in real time for me. That's just another thing. But where are the kids? Where were the kids? They weren't present. They just weren't there. So that's the kind of stuff that wasn't worked out, and they were doing things on the fly. That's why I say it was, I would say it's very amateurish what was going on.
Which is surprising, given the powers that would have designed this thing, that it should be so amateur. But you're familiar with the character Gene Rosen?
Gene Rosen, which one? Gene Rosen was
the man who was very close to the school, and he put the kids in and offered them juice and cookies, and he gave many different he recounted his rescuing or fielding these kids differently in many interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So can you comment on that? Or
I could comment on that, because this proves my point that these kids, did they get off of a bus? Where did they go? Okay, I think one of his stories was the kids got off the bus, and they made their way to his house, and there was all this panic or whatever was going on. Okay, there's something really wrong with that picture to begin with. First of all, when you're doing these scenarios, and this school had to have been trained for this because FEMA requires these trainings, and if you're getting safety money from the federal government, which every school does, they have to follow the proper protocols, and that's the proper release of students to their parents.
Right. He said that children showed up on his lawn, and they were with a bus driver.
Yeah.
So in one story. In another story, they were just there by themselves, and they were repeating, babbling that their teacher was dead. So what would the protocol be? That the children had supposedly, according to the story, fled the school on their own.
Well, that to me, really, that's very suspicious in and of itself.
Right.
It really is.
I mean, with the cops having gotten there in the first 5 minutes, and apparently some of them could still hear shooting going on, and how do kids get out and just run down the road, you know?
Mm-hmm. All that seems to be, and again, I want to go into the thing about the incident command system and evacuation, lockouts, and so on. None of that fits that protocol. None of it. The story of the Gene Rosen or any of that stuff, none of that fits. That, to me, is just more evidence that there were no students other than the actor students that were there.
Then what was the purpose of having a Gene Rosen player?
A diversion.
From what?
A diversion from the other realities going on, and to add more hype about the story. It's the same thing about the guy that was chased through the woods. You know, they had a couple guys that were chased through the woods. What were they all about? And there was no answers about any of that, about where they came from. And, you know, even my people couldn't come up with an answer about that. Some of my people say it was very sloppily done.
These are your insider people, right?
Right.
Now, did you see any of the videos of the people circling through the firehouse doors?
Yeah.
And did that strike you as, what did you think of that?
Well, I had already come to my conclusion that this was a drill, or this, and again, being very suspicious of the Obama administration, Dianne Feinstein, Second Amendment issues, Agenda 21 in particular. I had not seen that really for quite some time after, maybe a couple of weeks after, because we're engaged in our own things that we're doing in terms of investigations and stuff like that. We're pretty intense about what we're doing, here on Agenda 21 Radio. And we have some very highly placed sources of information that comes to us, and which we're very grateful for. But I, for one reason or another, I hadn't seen that video maybe 2 or 3 weeks until after the incident. And I just said, well, there's more evidence right there. Because what in the world are all those people doing there to begin with? You see, if you're doing an incident command center system, mm-hmm. there's a place for those people, and those people can be moved on rather than to see that kind of circus going on there, which is what that was. That was all staged.
Right. And there were far too many adults, no children whatsoever, no panic. The people that were there, they weren't dressed for December. So some people have suggested that that particular drill, the circling in and out of the firehouse, took place a lot earlier, and it matches the time frame and the clothing of the children being evacuated from the school. They did not have their coats. And I was going to ask you also, is it normal when there's an emergency for the teachers to evacuate the children without letting them get their coats, or would they take the extra time and say, children, go put your coats on as fast as you can? How does that work?
If there's a signal to get them out of the buildings, and there's always a signal to get them out of the buildings of some sort safely, they go directly out, period, end of subject. And if they can get their coats, that's great. But the safety thing is to get them away from where there potentially is a threat. And that would be the key thing. But again, now you see, you pointed to something else, and I brought this up earlier about the drills that we used to run, and people would always, you know, screw up the drill because they'd knock on the door and the teacher in an active shooter situation would open the door. Well, you know, how did that all play out? I was looking at things pretty much in real time within minutes of the news being broadcast that it was happening from the helicopter. Now, I'm a real time kind of guy. So I'm figuring I'm looking at maybe 15 minutes into the shooter, maybe 20 minutes into the shooter situation. I'm looking at clear video of the campus and so on. I'm not seeing anything happen. Where are the kids? The kids aren't there.
Right.
And they should be released, or they're, you know, what's going on with them?
And, of course, some people said that they were in closets for up to 4 hours, and that doesn't make any sense either. So
that does not make any sense to me, because what happens, and again, it goes back to the police and goes back to Columbine, they will go in and check every nook and cranny, and quite frankly, I know how that's done. We used to do that. We used to always look and check to see where people were.
Right, and you would not miss large adults hiding in small closets. The idea of Caitlin Roig and some of these teachers bundling all their kids into the bathroom and having a few sit on the toilet. I even heard the toilet roll holder. My God, that's pretty tough to do, even with a six-year-old. But what do you think of that? That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, you know, we tell people in an active shooter situation to seek, you know, to hide, or if there's a shooter there, to take and challenge. And, you know, we used to do these things when we had these dummy books, and we bring in an active shooter as the stage person and throw books at them, you know. And because that really throws them off. You're taught those kind of little techniques to throw the active shooter off. But I can imagine some people getting holed up in a closet or something like that if they haven't been able to lock the door. And that's one of the things we tell our people all the time, lock the door. And we made sure that in all schools should have them, the doors that have the inside keys in them, you know, so you can use a key on the inside also as we could on the outside.
Mm-hmm. So we have a couple of minutes left of this first hour. Do you have anything to say about Adam Lanza? Fiction, nonfiction, real?
Well, just on the surface of it, and again, I'm going to throw out that, you know, I'm highly specialized, trained in drug alcohol recognition. Obviously, he looks like he has some meds on board just by the look. But, you know, if you couch that along the same lines that this may be a fictional event, then he's a fictional character, which fits his description of what I see there. And, of course, if you're doing a fictionalized event like this, you want to have this most crazed individual that you can have, looking at you through the picture there. And that's exactly that's my speculation. I think that's what they wanted. That's what they did. And, he has a history, of course. What is the history? We're not real clear on the history. You know, first of all, they find out that he's got his brother's driver's license, and then there's some confusion. And, you know, I mean, it's one of these kind of scenarios that just didn't quite fit. And, as a school person, that to me was one of the big pieces of evidence with, why does he have his brother's license? And then they made contact with his brother, I guess, in New Jersey someplace or wherever he was. And there was an investigation there. That all seemed to be tracking with me as a distraction about what was really happening at the school. See, the more they, under this situation, this is my speculation, the more they could distract from the actual Sandy Hook school site itself and stage things away from there, the more they could sell the story of Sandy Hook on the whole.
That's a very, very good point, Paul. Excellent. And we should add that the mugshot they gave us of Adam Lanza was very painterly. It wasn't even a photo. And it did have that, ghoulish expression on it to make us think this is a real lunatic. And I really, really thank you, Paul Preston, for being with us.
That was fascinating, of course, where Paul Preston is a real expert on these matters, and where I think the point he made about the missing children is extremely significant, because when I and Wolf met with the Newtown School Board, who adopted the strategy of silence, one of the first points I made was that in my research I discovered that the school had 626 students from kindergarten through fourth grade. And that if you subtract 20 of those students, then there should have been 606. Where were they? Where were these 606 other students? You never see them. Never see them at all. And that if they were being taken out by buses, and notice how that in Gene Rosen suggested the six kids were dropped off at his house in a bus, then that if you had 50 students per bus, it would have taken a dozen buses. There were no buses in the vicinity. I mean, it's simply outrageous. And even the Gene Rosen story that the bus stopped in front of his house and let six students out and they wandered up to his house. Think about it. Gene Rosen was not the parent or the custodian of any of those six children. So what in the world would they be doing wandering up to his house, and where he claims he gave them cookies and orange juice before they would begin talking about what had happened? I asked the former chief psychologist for the FBI, whom I happen to know personally, if he'd evaluate this, and he told me the whole thing was completely incredible, that if they'd seen this shooting, this traumatic event, they couldn't have stopped talking about it from the beginning. There would have been nothing, you know, like the scenario he describes, and where Rosen himself even claims to have heard shots from the school, and yet he did not call 911. So I dare say this whole thing is ridiculous. If you want to get more about our visit to Newtown, go to the Newtown School Board meeting and the meaning of silence. There's much more there. And I have a dozen articles now about Sandy Hook on Veterans Today.